So I'm going to start off with a little Bible reading from Luke, a story about Jesus' life. Luke 4, when Jesus came to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, as was his custom, and he stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. He unrolled the scroll, and he found the place where it's written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he's anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives, and the recovery of sight to the blind, and to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." It's from Isaiah 61. And as he rolled up the scroll and gave it back to the attendant, he sat down, and all eyes were upon him. And then he began to say to them, "Today, this scripture is being fulfilled in your hearing." He goes on to teach a little bit and talk a little bit more, and at first the people are very pleased with what he's saying. And then they're less pleased with what he's saying. And according to Luke, in the end of the day, Jesus barely makes it out of town alive. That's kind of how it goes, isn't it? At one point he comments, "No prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown." In many parts of our world today, people are still waiting for the Messiah, the prophet, to come and save them, to fix things. There's always some interesting discussions around Easter time. There'll be a new movie coming out and books coming out, you know, the latest thing of, is there a bloodline of Jesus that continues on? Is someone from that group going to save us? Or, you know, it's very novel. It's novel every year. See, people are still waiting for someone to come and save them. And the people of Jesus' time were waiting for someone to come and save them. So what do you think would have happened if Jesus says, "Well, you know, I'm going to wait till somebody comes and saves me"? Think about that. We'd have a very different history in this world, wouldn't we? But he didn't wait for someone to come and save him. He managed to find that way to connect with the Spirit, with the presence of God in him, and then to share that. That was his work. He became the Messiah. He didn't wait for the Messiah. And interestingly enough, he doesn't do this until what would have been the latter part of the normal lifetime for a person of his era. We know that Jesus had at least one spiritual teacher, because we read about it in the Bible, John the Baptist. It's very interesting because his disciples make it clear that, you know, he was a follower, a part of John the Baptist group, but they also try to distance him from John the Baptist. And that makes me sort of suspect that maybe John the Baptist was a bit of a bigger teacher than we're led to believe. You ever notice how someone will try to distance themselves from, or at least the followers from the teacher's teacher? At some point in his working with John and with his own inner work, he encounters what is called the Spirit of the Lord. He comments that the Spirit of the Lord is upon him. And in other words, he bumps into his Christ nature. The human being, Jesus, bumps into the Christ nature fully and completely. And interestingly with him, it doesn't seem to leave. That presence seems to stick with him. Of course, in the truth, the Christ nature, the Christ, the Messiah, isn't someone that comes from the outside to save us. The Messiah that you're going to experience, that I'm going to experience, is that part that arises up in us. It's what God created us as and to be. And learning to connect with that, that's part of our goal in becoming saviors, not just for ourselves, but for everything around us. I'm going to talk about that a bit today because I want to talk about Christ present in the community. Christ present in the community as the Christ presences that we are. You know, the church's mission statement is to awaken to and to embrace the Christ in all persons through prayer and service. And those of you that know me know that I tend to focus a little more on the prayer end, although I like doing little projects and helpful things too. Here at Unity Church, we have lots of opportunities to to serve and to share and to get involved. And we learn how to do service through that. We also have lots of opportunities to learn how to pray and to work with prayer. And, you know, hopefully our prayer evolves from, oh, dear God, please help me. And if you help me, I'll be really good next year. And I promise to go to church every week. And, you know, the bargaining and the praying and the begging. Hopefully our prayer evolves beyond that. And hopefully our service also evolves. Hopefully our service also evolves beyond noticing where God hasn't done things quite right. And so we need to go in and fix them up, right? That's some people's idea of service. Sometimes it's been our ideas of service. There's a clever quote from Henry David Thoreau where he once commented, "If I knew for certain that a man was coming to my house with the intention of doing me some good, I would run for my life." We know what it's like when we encounter some overly enthusiastic person intending to do us some good. Running's probably a good idea. Well, in our mission statement, it talks about working through prayer and service, and I think they do both go hand in hand, and we have to practice them both. And here's the catch. As we practice both our prayer and as we practice being in service, we're not always going to get it right the first time. Have you noticed that? I was just in the library talking with Chris, and we were talking about sports, and I mentioned something about baseball because that's one of the few sports that I have some connection with. And I realized that a great baseball player may have a batting average of over 300. That means 2/3 of the time they miss, 1/3 of the time they hit it, and it counts. Same thing happens to us as we are beginning to work in our lives in learning how to serve, in learning how to connect. We often miss, but the ones that count, they count. And it takes us up to another level. And we evolve. So we have to do that. But in order to know how to actually serve or pray, we do have to quiet down enough that we can find that little inner guide, that intuition, that inner voice, that still small voice, which really isn't a voice, but that inner knowing that guides us into what to do. And then we follow it, and we practice, and we get better at discerning it, and we get better at following it. Someone once said, "A mistake is never a failure unless we use it as an excuse to stop trying." For some people, service seems a lot easier than prayer. It's easier to, you know, say, "Can I carry that for you? Can I do that for you? Can I hold the door?" than it is to actually pray with someone. But one of the interesting things about service is, can we offer service without attaching strings to it? Can we be of service to others, in our family, in our church, in our community, without waiting for them to say, "Oh, that was so nice. Thank you so much. Pats on the back." Or without expecting, "Well, now they're going to do something for me. I wonder what they're going to do." Can we offer service? Can we be in those relationships without strings attached? And without treating the person like they're helpless or broken? "Oh, I must help them, that poor, wretched creature." You know? You don't want to do that. How much of a gift is that? How much of a gift is it if someone serves you by seeing you as a poor, wretched creature? "Let them not serve me, please. Thank you." And we also have to be careful about the shoulds. I should be doing this, right? I should be doing this. I should be praying this. Can you imagine Jesus going around saying, "Well, what do you think I should do?" You know, asking his family and his community. That would not have produced something worth writing about. And certainly not waiting for compliments or pats on the back. So we're learning. We're all in a process of learning, of checking inward, learning, practicing. How do I develop my prayer? How do I develop my being in service to others? And that's where Unity, I think, comes in. By tradition, Unity has always been an educational movement, not a missionary group, not a service organization, an educational movement. In one of his books, Charles Fillmore writes this: "Unity is a link in a great educational movement, inaugurated by Jesus Christ. Our objective is to discern the truth in Christianity and to prove or demonstrate it. The truth that we teach isn't new. Neither do we claim any special revelations or discoveries of new religious principles. Our purpose is to help teach humankind to use and demonstrate the eternal truth taught by the Master. Unity is a non-denominational Christian organization. It uses the Bible, but it uses the Bible a little differently. They've always taught to use the Bible for inspiration. Inspiration, not regulation. Inspiration. So Unity offered classes to help people learn how to work with spiritual principles and how to take those into their daily lives. And it's interesting, they experimented with various things during the early days of Unity. At one point in downtown Kansas City, there was the Unity Inn, a vegetarian restaurant run by Unity, not just for the staff and friends, but to help introduce the community to vegetarianism. The Fillmores felt that moving into a vegetarian diet was helpful in helping to clear the mind and open people to deeper spiritual states. When the Unity Inn first opened, everything was done there on a love offering basis. That was interesting. Later on, the Fillmores bought a farm out in the country, Unity Farm. Now it's called Unity Village. It's a little bigger. It too was intended as a demonstration project. The idea was to create a community where people could live and work and study together and learn how to integrate their principles into their work and then take that back into the community in service, back into the larger community. I'm talking about Unity and these things today because this is our church's annual business meeting day. The meeting itself is going to be fairly short, 30, 45 minutes. But it's important because it is a time when we gather to both find out a little more about what's going on in the church and also to elect some people to the church board. It's interesting and very fortunate for us. Our church board is a lot more than just a group of people who handle the business and provide leadership for service teams. A successful church board, and we have one, is a group of people that hold the consciousness and the vision for the congregation, for the church, whose job is to hold that. It's truth seekers who are willing to be truth holders in the middle of all that goes on. The annual meeting, as I say, is also a time when we're going to share a little bit about what's been happening in the business of the church and also select next year's nominating team, people who will be involved in nominating people for the board for the next year. When all this happens prayerfully and consciously, when all this happens prayerfully and consciously, without a bunch of strings attached and shoulds attached, the church moves forward in its mission. The church is able to move forward in its mission of helping to help all people to awaken to and embrace their Christ nature, the divinity that lives inside each one of us, what God has created us to be, what we actually are when we get past all these stories and stuff that we have in our heads. So like the Fillmores, I think of church as being in the education business. We educate about prayer, different ways to approach prayer. We educate about the loving nature of God, of our Creator. That's a different thought for some people. We educate about the Messiah or the Christ, same word, one Hebrew, one Greek, the Messiah or Christ nature present in each person, not just the people here, but anybody you see out on the street. And we educate about how service can work, how people can be in service when we allow ourselves to be led by that small voice, by that inner knowing, rather than by our shoulds or by our egos. I also see church as a place, sort of a laboratory for learning. You know, we come together, all kinds of people from all kinds of places, and we have the opportunity to practice together and to do things together and to practice things like being with others without jumping into judgments about them or what they're saying or the words they're using. Interesting challenge for some of us. We have the opportunity to experiment with different ways of working cooperatively with people who may not see things the same way we do. Interesting. We have the opportunity to practice extending small acts of kindness, helpfulness, and service. And we have the opportunity, anytime you get a bunch of people together, to practice forgiving those who do things differently, who see things differently, who may irritate us. The point of doing it here and practicing it here is hopefully, at least here in the church, you can practice doing those things in a safe and accepting environment, in a safe and accepting environment, where we can begin to make some progress in our path of prayer and service. But of course, our spiritual practices, our religious practices, if you want to call them that, shouldn't end here at the church. Just like Jesus took his spiritual understanding to the larger community, took it out with him, we need to take ours out into the community. And of course, the truth is, you're doing that all the time, whether you intend to or not. Because whether you intend to or not, your consciousness goes with you wherever you go. And it impacts the people around you, whether it is clear or whether it is confused. It goes with you wherever you go. So it might be good to, as we go out into the community, to check in with that little inner Messiah, that little small voice, that presence inside, and ask it for some clear guidance, you know? Where should I be going? What should I be doing? Who should I be saying what to? You know? How should I be extending service? If we're willing to seek our inner Christ or Messiah nature and connect with it, even in part, partially, and if we're willing to allow it to begin to guide us, even occasionally, then perhaps something that comes through us will have an effect, a powerful positive effect on the people around us or on us. It'll definitely bring a little more light out into the world, won't it? Maybe it'll help somebody else remember who they are inside too. So back to the question. What if Jesus had decided to wait for the Messiah to show up instead of becoming the Messiah himself and leading the life he did? Will we wait for some Messiah or Jesus, or someone to return and do things for us, set our world right? Or will we prayerfully practice stepping forward, reaching beyond our habits and our customary thoughts and our fears to be the Messiahs, that we've been created to be, to do what is ours to do? I hope we will. To help us move in that direction, I put a little affirmation in the back of each bulletin, and it simply says, my Christ nature, remember Christ and Messiah are the same word, my Christ nature is calling me to awaken and to serve. Let's share that together. Together we say, my Christ nature is calling me to awaken and to serve. And again, my Christ nature is calling me to awaken and to serve. One more time so we hear it. My Christ nature is calling me to awaken and to serve. Close your eyes and let that thought settle in. Your Christ nature, my Christ nature, it's calling us, each one of us, to wake up, to remember who we are, who we always have been, and then to take that out in our service, in our activity, in our life. The still small voice, the Christ nature, the divinity within, whatever you would call it, calls to each one of us each day, wake up, remember. It reminds us that all around us is more of the Christ, more of who and what we are. It reminds us that it's present in the people behind us and in front of us, the people we meet on the street. It reminds us that we have things to do in this lifetime, not waiting for someone else. We have things that are ours to do, gifts to share, prayers to hold, a life to live. Deep within each one of us, our Christ nature calls to us to wake up, to be the Christ, to stop waiting, to live the life God has created us to live, to be a blessing both for ourselves and for our community. So I'll invite us with that thought in mind to share that affirmation together again. Together we say, my Christ nature is calling me to awaken and to serve. And one more time. My Christ nature is calling me to awaken and to serve. May we all listen carefully and follow. Amen.